Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahava, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo, bienvenidos, hey, my name is Jed Lee, welcome to Reading with Your Kids. We are broadcasting to the world from the book-loving neighborhood of Reedville, the loveliest neighborhood in all of Boston. We are so very honored and absolutely delighted that you're joining us in our mission to help all families grow closer through reading. We do that by sharing fun, thoughtful, and thought-provoking conversations with fascinating people who just happen to be writing books for kids of all ages. You can join us in our mission by telling all of your family and friends about the show and letting them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM/FM 24/7 radio network, and they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, Amazon Music, Audible, CastBox, Player FM, wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. Two wonderful guests for you today. First, joining us from Turin in Italy, Sarah Schroeder is here to celebrate Max, the gemstone finder. And later in the show, Daniel Harmon, the showrunner of the Tuttle Twins, will be here to celebrate season 4 of this wonderful family animated series. Hey, I want to let you know that this episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Chicken Coop Chaos by Nancy Tavares. Are you ready for some barnyard fun your kids will absolutely adore? Then you've got to check out Nancy Tavares' delightful books, Chicken Coop Chaos and Chicken Coop Chaos Christmas. In the original Chicken Coop Chaos, we meet Pearl, a hen who loves peace, order, and a tidy little hen house. But when Wendell the Rooster barges in and decides he's not leaving, Pearl has to hatch a clever plan to take back her space. And let's just say things get hilariously chaotic. And just in time for the holidays, Chicken Coop Chaos Christmas brings even more laughs, heart, and festive feathered fun. These books are perfect for young readers, classrooms, and family read-aloud time. So flap on over to your favorite bookstore or online retailer and grab your copies of Chicken Coop Chaos and Chicken Coop Chaos Christmas today. Your kids will be clucking with joy. This episode is brought to you by onceuponadance.com. Ignite imagination with award-winning dance and movement books. Once Upon a Dance inspires young readers to twirl, leap, and dream with whimsy and wonder. Whether your child enjoys unicorns, bats, zombies, or cats, Once Upon a Dance has a dance-it-out story to get them moving. For more information about this 37 delightful books, please visit onceuponadance.com or find them on your favorite social media platform. My friends, we are going to have a wonderful time. Joining us from Turin in Italy, our guest is here today to celebrate her new picture book. It's called Max the Gemstone Finder. Please welcome to the show, Sarah Schroeder. Sarah, how are you?
Hi, Jed. Thank you so much for having me. I am good. Cold, but good.
I hear you, Cole. We're lucky in Boston. I am not going to say anything bad about the weather. It's raining here in Boston, but it was supposed to snow, and I would take rain over snow any day.
I am from an island, the island of Bermuda, which is normally a tropical paradise, and my kids convinced us to pick somewhere cold and away from the sea, close to the mountains, which is a totally new experience for us, but something we're getting used to slowly.
Okay. We're going to chat about that in a little while, but before we do, let's talk about Max. Max, the gemstone finder, was kind of inspired by your son. Am I right?
Yes, and his name is Max, Maximus. And this little boy, he's 5 years old now, but he is the inspiration for this crazy character, Max the Gemstone Finder, who loves collecting rocks. Rocks and minerals and gemstones, and it's his passion. And I think that lots of parents can relate to having kids who are passionate about something, and there's something magical about stones and rocks. So I think it's not that unusual.
Yeah. You know, I I do remember being fascinated by rocks. I didn't collect them, but I do have one rock that I've kept for over, wow, it's, I think it was, I received it in 1983. I was doing my first ever performance as Jet Li the Clown, and it was pretty terrible. It was some party, and there was a wedding band performing, and the orchestra leader came up to me, and he said, and he gave me this little white rock, and he said, here, this is going to bring you good luck in your career. And I don't know why he felt inspired to do that, but he did, and I kept the rock, and I don't know how great I was, but I was at least good enough to make a living doing it for over 35 years.
So it must have worked.
Yeah, yeah. Where do you think your son's interest and fascination with rocks comes from?
Well, he's grown up collecting treasures wherever he's been. I think maybe it's something about being close to the ground, but kids just see things that are shiny and that are interesting and that are different, and they're so close to it and they just reach down and pick it up and like explore the world through their eyes. It's just something that he's always done. And when I say he collects them, like, I'm not kidding. Like, there are rocks in our car door. There are rocks in our bathroom. There are rocks in our washing machine, because sometimes I forget to check his pockets. And then 3 days later, there's like a rumbling sound in the washing machine and I find them sitting at the front. They're everywhere. And that's a lot about what the story is about, how this kid who is so passionate about something that his family don't really understand. They don't get why this is so important to him until, you know, obviously towards the end of the story. But really, my hope is that parents and caregivers will kind of rethink the way that they talk to their kids and interact with their kids who are very deeply passionate about something. And it could be, you know, Lego or dinosaurs or Hot Wheels or Pokemon or dancing or whatever it is, because when you really understand what somebody loves, it helps to build your connections and it helps to give them self-confidence and it helps to inspire friendships for them and it makes them feel seen. And that's what we want for our kids, not just a love of learning and a love of reading, but really, you know, understanding like, what is this person about and what's important to them?
Yeah. And I love that Max reminds us to look for the beauty in all the little things that are around us.
And especially in an age where our kids are so screen fixated, to be able to remind them about nature, about science, in this case about geology, but also there's a blending with some animal magic in there as well. But just to, I think fundamentally kids do want to be outside. They want to play outside. And sometimes it's just easier, I don't have time to go outside, or just sit down and draw something, or sit down and watch this, or, you know, really kind of taking the time again to get back to nature or just go for a walk or even just in the garden, and so my Max makes me do that, but every time we walk down the street and he's found something else that's, Mom, look at this, it's so cool, it's green or it's purple or it's an orange rock, I wonder if it's made out of clay, or that helps me kind of become a kid again.
I love that. And the difference between kids these days and when I was growing up, back when the dinosaurs were around, we talk about we were out, at breakfast time. We finish a breakfast and our parents would go, goodbye, and don't come back until the streetlights come on and for dinner.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I was the same. And I grew up in a neighborhood and with lots of family members. And I wish I'm sure there are still families that do that. But in an age where we're so worried about security and, who's interacting with our kids and what they're exposed to, I think it's a lucky family who still have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the ironic thing is that we're so worried about our kids, we don't let them out of our sight. But meanwhile, we'll give them this little device that we think, oh, that gives our kids access to the world. But it also gives the world access to our kids.
Yeah, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and she is desperate for an iPhone. And it's a constant struggle to stick to our principles and to, you know, for us, for example, we've said you have to be 14 and then there are going to be rules around it. And it's so easy for them to say, but my friend has this, my friend can do that. And just really trying to have that interaction where they understand that it's for their protection, mm-hmm. That we aren't trying to be terrible parents, that we're not trying to cut them off from their friends. But, you know, there are there's the whole host of things that we could talk about, but trying to enforce boundaries in a way where she's understanding why we're doing it. Mm-hmm. But it's so difficult to stick to, you know, to to stay firm in today's age.
It really is. I remember when my kids, we're blessed. We live in the city of Boston, but we live as far away from downtown as you can be and still be within the city. And we have a wildlife mm-hmm. sanctuary on the other side of our fence. We have a huge piece of property. Mm-hmm. So our kids were able to play outside and they were still close. And my wife, and I remember one day we're talking, my son was in middle school and he was going to be, the next year he was going to be going to a high school where it was 4 or 5 miles away from home. And I said to my wife one night, I said, you know, next year, you know, Chris is going to have to take the bus. And this look of horror went across her face. It was like, and I said, but he'll have a phone. So we'll be able to keep in touch with him and you can call him and everything. And she goes, yes, tonight. And I go, excuse me? No, I want him to have a phone tonight. So we had to go out and get him a phone that night so it could calm her down. But back then, it was just the phone. Yes. There wasn't all the access to the internet and all this. And I remember when we had to replace his phone a couple of years later and the salesperson's like, oh, now your son's going to be able to access Facebook and this and that. And I goes, I don't want him to access Facebook. I just get me the dumb mm-hmm. phone again. And they couldn't. And that was frustrating.
Yeah. Do you know what? For me, it's really... I do have fear about other people having access to my kids, but mostly for girls, for example, I really have concerns about girls. When you're not face to face, it's so easy to write a message and press send and say something that's, you know, you don't mean, but it's mean. Yeah. And because you're not talking to someone, you just have that extra layer of protection or boundary, you know, there's no real boundaries and people just say what they want. And then, you know, they're not really thinking about feelings. And so I think that that's the most damaging thing. Yes, of course, exposure to inappropriate websites that is a real fear, but mostly it's like trying to encourage girls still to just have face-to-face conversations and not hide behind phones, because girls can be really mean to each other. And so I think as they need another level of maturity. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of my real concerns as well.
I'm really curious. You were mentioning, you and I were talking before we hit record about how big and complex the children's book industry is.
Yeah.
You already were pretty busy as a lawyer. Where did you find the time to say, okay, I'm going to put another hat on and become a children's author?
Well, actually, I grew up between London and Bermuda, and we were lately in Bermuda where our family is. And my husband and I kind of started to have this conversation about what would it look like if we did something different and we had an adventure as a family. And it was so outrageous, like a conversation that you just kind of have, and I'm sure people have this all the time in their homes. They're like, well, what if we changed our life? And you never really do it. And you just think about it. And we said, okay, well, what would that look like? And then we took the next step. Okay, well, let's do a little recon trip and see what that would look like and feel like. And then let's see if we can find a place that we would like. And then in the end, we decided, let's give this a go. My husband is half Italian. His father was from outside of Milan. And he hadn't really ever explored that part of his culture. Like I said, we're kind of Bermudian islanders. And so we thought, let's give it a go. So we've been in Italy about a year and a half, and we decided to take a sabbatical, and we picked as a family the location that we're in, and that gave me the opportunity to, most importantly, spend time with the kids and reconnect as a family, spend time with my husband, which is weird. Like, we have lunch together, we drink coffee together, we take the kids to school and we pick the kids up from school. Whereas, you know, historically we had a nanny and support network. And so now it's just our nuclear family. And I found that, you know, we were sitting at home while the kids were at school and we're in Italy now, when we're not in Italian classes. And I said, now I can finally write this book, which was just amazing because, you know, today we were walking through downtown Turin, and we had done our recon tour two Christmases ago. And so this is our third Christmas. And we looked at each other and we were like, oh, my God, this is our third Christmas in this town. If you had told us the month before that Christmas that soon you'll be living here, we would never have believed it. You know, it's just something that felt right for us. And it's a huge, steep learning curve. But how lucky are we that we get to spend this time with our kids while they want to spend time with us? It's not going to last forever.
Yes. I absolutely agree with you. I was really blessed that my daughter, she went to an international school here in Boston. And so she had a lot of vacation time when her classmates would go back to Italy or China or wherever. And she would choose to come out on the road with me. And so we would go out and tour, and she'd be my stage crew, and we'd be on the road for 3 weeks at a time, a couple of times a year. And it was absolutely wonderful. And you know, if somebody had said to me, oh, yeah, your 16, 17-year-old daughter's going to want to go out on the road with you for 3 weeks at a time, I never would have believed it. But it happened, and it was such a blessing to be able to spend that kind of time with your kids.
Yeah, and to see them have all these new experiences. Mm-hmm. And like you said, so our kids go to an international school, and there's 38 nationalities represented. And actually, our kids are, although they speak English at the school, they learn in English. They are really only a handful of English native speaking kids. So, you know, they're being exposed to all these different languages, people from all over the world, and getting to meet people that maybe they wouldn't normally at a young age. And hopefully that helps to, you know, open their minds to the fact that the world is a much bigger place than this, you know, small island of 60,000 people where they originally came from.
Yeah. That must have been quite a culture shock, not only going from sunny Bermuda to the mountains of northern Italy, but just, like you said, going from an island of 60,000 people to going to a nation of millions. What was that like for the kids and for you?
For the kids, I think the kids are resilient, and also curious. And so after, you know, it's taken some time, but I think that they were blessed to make friends very quickly. And because we're cross-cultural, so we spend a lot of time in London, and they're quite used to traveling, they've remarkably adapted. I think it's definitely been harder as adults being in a community, for me, for sure, where I didn't know the language before, and I'm learning, but slowly again, like learning a new skill in your later years takes longer for me than for, you know, for them. And also coming from a community where we had a very strong social fabric and a network, and a village to really help us raise our family to being somewhere where we don't know anyone, and trying to build a new community definitely takes time because you really have to put yourself outside your comfort zone. and look for those opportunities to meet new people and to embarrass yourself. So especially learn, and I'm not going to do it here, but, you know, learning a new language, it's so, especially as adults, you don't want to embarrass yourself. You don't want to, say it until it's perfect. And, you know, but we live in a town where English is not that common. And so you really have to do it, and it's uncomfortable. But it makes you grow for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that is one of the things that I feel blessed by, because I don't care if I make a mistake. It's I did a tour of El Salvador with a group called Clowns Without Borders. And for some reason, the only member of that performing troupe who was not fluent in Spanish was made the MC. And so I got up one day, and my intention was to say, "We are Clowns Without Borders. Somos payasos sin fronteras." And instead, I stood up and said, "Somos payasos sin frentes," which means we are clowns without foreheads. And and it was one of the best jokes.
And everyone laughed.
Everybody laughed. And when I got in on the joke, I said, "Oh, I'll never do that again." And everybody in the troupe said, "No, you're going to do it every single time."
Oh, my gosh. That's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me, now that Max is out there in the world and you're coming on podcasts, celebrating the book, and perhaps going to start to be doing book visits and things like that, are you going to write a second book?
Well, I would love to. Max has asked for a number of different books.
Okay.
And he changes his mind a fair bit. But one of the books that we are thinking about is a kid's book about kids who move. So kids who are relocating somewhere, and maybe some of the challenges that they might be facing and how to address some of those issues. I wrote a kid's guide for parents, because one of the things that we've been helping people with is their relocation planning process. And so we have a lot of material and a workbook to help people who are relocating, because we did find that so much of relocating is my overwhelming anxiety mindset in the planning process. And then it's very hard to transition afterwards, once you're there, into, it's like a grief process. I think you kind of grieve your old life and at the same time as trying to embrace this new life. And I think sometimes that's hard to articulate for kids. And they have all these big feelings and emotions about it, and really trying to help them unpack that. It's okay to feel sad about what you've left behind, and all those experiences aren't invalidated by this move. You're not running from your past, but you are. But we have the opportunity to embrace something new and kind of balancing that. So I think maybe there's a story in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think whether you're moving from Bermuda to Italy, or you're moving from East Boston to South Boston.
Yeah.
It's a big change, and there's going to be a lot of feelings, and you meeting new friends and getting new routines. So, yeah, I think there absolutely would be a market for and a need for that type of book.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks, Jed. You pushed me.
So now that I planted the seed, when that book comes out, you have to come back on Reading with the Kids to celebrate it.
Thank you. I would love that. That would be great.
In the meantime, let's tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Max the Gemstone Finder.
Well, Max is available on Amazon, and I think it would be a wonderful Christmas gift, whether it's the paperback version in the stocking, or the hardcover version, or it's also on Kindle. And then on all good bookstores, you can find it and order it. And I have a website, www.sarahschroeter.com, in case you want to find out a little bit more about our story. And of course, we're all over Facebook and Instagram too. If you want to follow along, you can see Max in action as he, last weekend we went to a gemstone festival where he found his latest finds to add to his collection. So you can follow him along too.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking to the author of Max, the Gemstone Finder. Our guest has been Sarah Schroeder. Sarah, thanks so much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Thank you, Jed. Take care. Appreciate it. And happy holidays.
Get ready, adventure fans. Toby Baxter is back. In I Heart River Home, the fourth thrilling book in the Adventures of Toby Baxter series, written by Tim Wright, 13-year-old Toby dives into his most unexpected quest yet. He's battling trolls, navigating the sandpit of love, and getting stuck with an L-O-V-E compass. But when the girl of his dreams, Rainy, is kidnapped, Toby must summon more courage than ever before. All four books in the Adventures of Toby Baxter series have been honored as Reading With Your Kids certified great reads, each packed with fast-paced action, humor, and heart. So grab your copy of I Heart River Home today and join Toby on an unforgettable journey through River Home, where every page is an adventure. Hey, my friends, I have a super idea you are going to love. How about this weekend, turn your backyard cookout into a storybook celebration? Fire up the grill, crack open a few of your favorite picture books, and serve up Big Fork Brand's legendary bacon sausage. Made with nitrate-free bacon and premium pork, it's juicy, smoky, and unforgettable. Top it off with Big Fork's spicy Chicago Fire sauce, and you've got a meal as bold as the characters in your favorite bedtime tale. Get 20% off your order using the promo code READ at BigForkBrands.com. That's BigForkBrands.com. Promo code READ to get 20% off, because nothing brings families together like great food, great books, and a whole lot of flavor. Big Fork Brands. Read, grill, repeat. This episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Trumpet, the Miracle Wolf Pup Series. There's a brand new book in the series, and we're so excited to tell you all about it. Trumpet Becomes a Mom. In this exciting book, Trumpet and Lighthawk, now a bonded pair, start their own family with their very first litter of pups. Families can read together, schools can explore the importance of wolf packs in conservation, and Trumpet fans everywhere can celebrate this milestone in her incredible journey. Grab your copy today, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, select bookstores, and the Wolf Conservation Center, where Trumpet and her family live. Plus, 50% of all profits go right back to supporting the Wolf Conservation Center, with more donated to Lighthawk Conservation Flying. So grab your book today and have a group haul for Trumpet and her family. Join us right now from the beautiful state of Utah. Our guest is here today to celebrate season 4 of his TV series, The Tuttle Twins. Please welcome to the show creator and showrunner, Daniel Harmon. Daniel, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me on.
Delighted to have you on. My kids are grown. My days of watching cartoons with kids is kind of over, except for when our neighbor Finn comes over, and then I sit down with him and watch it. But we've been limited to Bluey so far.
Bluey's great.
I was blown away. I was blown away. I was expecting falling asleep, but there was a lot of humor there that I got and Finn didn't get, and vice versa. Tell us about the Tuttle Twins.
Yeah, so Tuttle Twins is based on the best-selling book series by Connor Boyack and Elijah Stanfield. And it's a book series that teaches kids about principles of freedom and economics. And so what happened is Connor has a couple kids of his own. And when he went to go teach them about things like rights to life, liberty, and property, and entrepreneurship, he did a search on Amazon. And as far as resources for kids go, he came up, very empty-handed. He felt like there should have been more things like that there. So he decided to write a book about it. And one book on that was based on Frederick Bastiat's The Law, that talks specifically about a person's right to life, liberty, and property. That book was received so well by myself and a whole bunch of other parents that it became another book and a whole series. And then now, years later, we've made it into a TV show. And the TV show teaches the same principles, but it lives in a little bit of a different world where there's some kind of magic school bus type adventure to it. We've got a grandma with a time traveling wheelchair that takes her kids back in time to learn from figures in history like Benjamin Franklin and George Washington and Harriet Tubman and Frederick Bastiat and many others. And they learned about these things like freedom of speech and the golden rule and entrepreneurship and where does inflation come from? You know, pretty big kind of concepts, but when you distill them down into lessons that, you know, an 8-year-old can understand, it also happens to resonate really well with the parents. So yeah, it's been a fun journey.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got to explain to me, where does inflation come from?
Yeah. Well, the primary driver of inflation is the Federal Reserve and it being able to create money out of thin air. When you increase the money supply, then the prices of goods and services naturally go up. You know, the one way I put it to my kids at one point was like, so if you had a stack of money in front of you, that would be pretty great, right? Like you could go spend it the way you wanted. They're like, yeah. I'm like, well, what if that whole mountain? So we live right by some mountains. What if that whole mountain was money? And everyone could just go and grab from it. I'm like, what would the money be worth then? And they're like, oh, like no one would care very much. And like, they understood that kind of concept pretty well. And that's one of the things we kind of teach about in the show, that when money is kind of printed and created out of thin air without real expenditure of resources and energy, then you get situations like the grocery prices going up every single year. And, you know, the cost of living increasing all the time and people feeling like they're constantly playing from behind, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the inflation lesson in a nutshell.
these are some lessons that there are a lot of adults need to learn.
Oh, yes, 100%. In fact, we've designed the show as a co-viewing experience, meaning we've always wanted it to be something that kids would choose over their other options for entertainment on places like Netflix and TikTok and YouTube, and actually watch it just for the entertainment value of it, because it has really fun stories and interesting characters. But then they're also getting a really great lesson behind it as well. And then that the parents have jokes in there that go right over the heads of the 6 and 8 year olds, but land directly in the lap of, you know, people like me, they're like 35 to 45 kind of age, you know, that are trying to raise kids in this crazy world. And luckily it's worked out that way where it's over 80% of our episodes are watched with the parents, because we want those critical thinking discussions happening around the dinner table after you view it. We don't want just parents just to trust us and throw their kids in front of it and be like, okay, go watch this. Yes, we want the kids to be able to choose it as, you know, something that's entertaining and that they like, but we very much want the whole family to be able to watch and enjoy and discuss these things, because they can be weightier things like inflation, like supply and demand.
I love it. You know, I launched Reading With Your Kids because I know the relationship I have now with my now adult kids was built on a foundation of reading together, which led to cooking together and playing ball together and watching TV and movies together, and continues to this day. I think it's so very, very important. And I have great memories. My daughter, when she was in third grade, wanted to watch one of those ghost hunting shows. And she was afraid to watch it by herself. I remember it was like a holiday. It might have been Christmas. And I was out and busy. And she's like, I want to watch this show. No one would sit down with her. And finally, I just said, well, let me sit down. And I think we watched 8 seasons of it together. They never found a ghost. It was very frustrating.
They overpromised and underdelivered on that one, huh?
Absolutely. Tommy, as I understand it, this is produced by Angel Studios. And Angel Studios, I know, is unique in that most of their content is kind of crowdfunded. Am I right about that?
Yes. So we actually were, when we went and did crowdfunding to raise money for our first season, we were able to go out to an audience and show a kind of proof of concept of what the first episode would be like. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't finished animation because we didn't have money for all that yet. Mm-hmm. That's what we were raising the money for, was to finish the episode. But we had collected some storyboards together and some temporary voices and sound effects and things, and put it together in an edit where it kind of flowed like a moving black and white storybook, right, with rough sketches. Mm-hmm. And we went to the crowd and raised $3.7 million. We set the record for the highest funded kids show in the history of the world at that point. And so a lot of people were even saying, you know, I don't even care if I ever make my money back on this. I just want this to exist for my kids and my grandkids. So many people were really into the mission of it because they recognize that so many of these principles are not being taught anymore in the public school system. They're also not being taught in culture. And so mm-hmm. really, if you want these values and these principles passed down to your kids, then you have to take the initiative to do it. And that's why the book series has been so popular. And that's why the TV show has been so popular. And so Angel Studios, as you mentioned, they're our distributor. Mm-hmm. And they help us get the show to places all over the world. And I think this year we might be the number one TV show. It's either number one or number two. I haven't seen the latest numbers on the platform. So it's resonating. People are watching it a lot. And we've now, you know, we're now releasing our fourth season. We're in the midst of releasing an episode every single month. So it's been quite the ride.
That's really fantastic. And again, I love this idea that you're creating this for families to experience together. I think that's something that's so important. And I love how you're describing, you know, this content there for kids and then this content there for adults. I made a living doing educational magic shows at schools and libraries and whatnot. And one of the, and people don't get this when I say it, but one of the most fun things that I did in the show was every once in a while I'd come up with a joke and it would die in the air and it would hang there for a couple of seconds. And then one adult in the back would get it and would just be rolling on the floor. And people would just be looking back and go, what do you think? And me, and I'm like, oh, yes, I did it.
Yep. You can't, you know, not all of our jokes play perfectly. Mm-hmm. But we have a very unique opportunity with Angel because none of the episodes that we put out can be released without the approval of the Angel Guild. So the Angel Guild is a collection of over 1.5 million people that they have a guild membership. And what that does is it gives them access to all the content before it releases publicly. So they get to see Tuttle Twins episodes when they're in the earlier stages of development. Like even before it goes to final animation, they get to watch these episodes first. And they sit down with their kids and they're able to tell us, okay, is this fulfilling Angel Studios' mission of amplifying light? And also, how disappointed would you be if this episode was never made? And then they rate that. And luckily, we always score really high. We always pass. But the executives, Angel, who happen to be my brothers, they cannot green light a single episode of Tuttle Twins. That has to be done by the guild. That's where the approval actually comes from. They can't just say, oh, I like this, let's put this out there. The crowd has to like it. And so we are very much accountable to the end customer rather than just going off and doing our own thing. The traditional Hollywood model is, you know, a handful of executives are calling the shots on pretty much everything that gets put in theaters and everything that gets streamed. And whether they like it or not is whether or not that show gets made, right? And then if it's resonating with customers and working, then they continue to renew it and all those kinds of things. But it doesn't actually start with the audience, with Angel. It actually starts with the audience needing to find that of value. And mm-hmm. So for us, it's really helpful in that process, because when we submit an episode, we can see when people are like, this joke was really funny, or, you know, this one I didn't really care for. And like, sometimes we even, you know, take things out based on audience reactions. So we're very much trying to listen to the parents in this process, because we know they have a lot of trust in us in creating this kind of content for the kids.
That's quite a responsibility.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's one I don't take lightly either. I'm a father of seven kids. So I'm creating the show first and foremost for me and for my kids. And it just so happens that it also works for a whole bunch of other people's kids as well. And for a whole bunch of other parents. So, that's the mentality behind the show, is we make stuff that we feel like works for us. And then, there's some sort of a Venn diagram of what works for us and what crosses over with what the audience actually wants. Mm-hmm. And we're able to get that pretty right most of the time. And it's been great. We've got really high ratings on the Angel Guild. So far we haven't had them shoot down any of our episodes. We kind of know the audience. We kind of know, how to make it so it's appealing to them. And, and so we are just really focused on how do we make the message as clear and educational as possible? And then how do we make it really entertaining along the way?
Who are some of the characters from history we're going to meet in season 4?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm going to have to do a refresher, because quite honestly, I'm in the middle of like
season 5 and 6, right?
Of developing a lot of stuff to come. Let's see. One of them. Oh gosh, now I'm seriously going to have to go back. Well, the reason I'm saying this is because the episodes that are coming out the soonest are the ones that I already got in the rearview mirror. I was already working on. So I'm presently working on ones that are in the latter half of the season. So, but we are going to be going back to, George Washington, once again for a little thing. And then let me pull up the other one here. I'm sorry. You put me on the spot. I wasn't prepared to answer that.
How dare I ask you about your show, dude?
Well, it's just at this time, by the time we're in the fourth season, I kind of, quite honestly, I get him confused. So I'm so in the thick of it. I'm so in the thick of it while we're creating it. And, I'm the showrunner, which means I'm not directing each individual episode. I'm kind of doing it from a higher level where I'm checking in to make sure the quality is there. But then the seasons start to mix together for me. Cause once I've seen it and I've shipped it to Angel, I'm like, that's behind me. And yep. So, especially in it with the pressure of the podcast, I'm like, oh, my mind's drawing a blank, but if you'll allow me to pull it up, I'll get it for you. Give me one second.
No worries at all. My friend, I've had a couple of occasions where guests have come on and said, nice to see you again, Jedley. And I'm like, oh, you were on the show before. Sorry.
Yeah. It's once something gets behind you, then it's a little bit, tougher. So we've got, Milton Friedman. And we've got Safdien Amous, who's talking about sound money. We've got Henry Ford coming up, Murray Rothbard. I missed one. Oh, and then we've got even one of the figures from history is the food pyramid that we're going to visit. It's the food pyramid, but, kind of, personified, kind of giving a little bit of warning signs of like when the government gets, involved with prescribing this is healthy versus this isn't, like, still got to do the critical thinking of like, wait a minute, is this really the case or not? Cause so much of what was in the food pyramid led to, so many of the, health epidemic problems that we're facing today.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's led to this, my belly getting way too big because I love pasta and bread too much.
Right. We all do.
So tell me, where can we find the Tuttle Twins?
If you download the Angel app, so if you go to the Google Play or the Apple App Store, you can find the Angel app. You can download it. You can watch seasons 1 through 3 for free. If you want to see, watch season four, then a guild membership is required. That not only includes the latest episodes that are coming out, but also the ability to help shape the future of entertainment by watching other content that's coming down the way. You can rate Tuttle Twins episodes or other ones that come in. And so, yeah, that's going to be the best way to do it, is to download the Angel app for free and, watch it from there. If you want to do it online, I don't know what, age your audience is, but I think you can just go to angel.com/Tuttle Twins. I'm looking it up right now, see if that link is still active. And it appears that yes, it is. So angel.com/TUTTLE Twins.
Yeah.
And that will direct you there too.
You know, one of the things that I've heard is that there's such a lack of creativity. Every movie that comes out is a remake of something that was a hit before, or another superhero movie. It sounds like there's not a whole lot of creativity in that traditional space. Why do you think that might be?
I think it's a few things. I think when companies become really big, they're often trying to protect shareholders. And so they're looking for as sure of bets as possible rather than taking bigger risks. Because maybe sometimes if a risk flops, you can get an earful much more than when you have like sort of a regular or old predictable thing that you put out and then it just does okay. Like, they're not going to hear it as much on that. So I think there's that Hollywood is looking for as much predictability as possible in the revenue stream of when they go to theaters. And then I think another element of it is that the filmmaking process has become so expensive that there's less risk taking as well. And what I mean by so expensive is the fact that there's been a system in place at Hollywood for a long time where there were back ends, right? If a film performed really well, then you would get a royalty check cut of some kind. If you were like a director or an actor or playing some sort of a key role in the production. What happened is over time, like, it became kind of just known in the industry that back ends were just never paid out. There was clever accounting used to say, oh, we're not profitable yet, we can't pay things out. And so what happened is the production companies and the producers and the directors, I think, started charging as much money up front as possible to guarantee that they get money rather than wait for anything for performance on the back end, because they just felt like it was so unlikely that it would ever come. And what that did is I think it drove the price up further and further for the creation of these films and of these TV shows. And Angel is actually really trying to help disrupt that model, where they have a very straightforward split that when a program like my TV show goes on to the platform, then it ends up, there's a split that happens immediately with anything. They take the marketing cost and then they just pay out a split. So anytime there's something paid out, it's between Angel and the creator and the creators. And I think that's going to incentivize people to keep their budgets a little bit lower rather than go the other way, where it's like, well, the only way we get money is if we really balloon this thing up and get as much money in the act of creating it as possible, as opposed to any performance on the back end. But Angel is doing enough payouts now for the creators that I think the word's going to start to get out in the industry that there's potential for a better way to be able to do this.
Love it.
Because the Netflix model is straight up that. It's you make your production, and then then Netflix will they pay an additional, I think, 20%. So if it costs $100 million to make a film, they're going to pay you $120 million. So you get your margin worked in there. But that doesn't give that creates incentive to make it as expensive as possible, because then you get as much margin as possible, right?
Okay. Uh-huh.
And so I think the creativity goes down when there's not as when you have too much time and too much money. Those are creativity killers.
Mm-hmm.
You actually think more creatively when you have to work inside of a box, when you have real constraints with your money and your time. That's when you really do better problem solving.
Yeah. I love it. I love what Angel's doing. I'm so happy that the Tuttle Twins are experiencing the popularity season 4. You're working on season 5 and beyond. That's fantastic. Would you come back and celebrate season 5 when it's coming out next year?
That would be great.
Awesome.
That'd be awesome.
Tell everybody again, the Angel app is the place to find the Tuttle Twins, correct?
Correct. The Angel app you can download for free on the App Store or Google Play, or you can go to angel.com/Tuttle Twins to find us as well.
I've had a great time speaking to the creator and showrunner of the Tuttle Twins. Season 4 is starting now. Our guest has been Daniel Harmon. Hey, Daniel, thanks so much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Reading With Your Kids. And will join us for the next exciting episode of the show. If this episode made you smile or gave you something to think about, please share the link to the show with somebody you love. We would love it if you could leave us a 5-star review and also subscribe to the show wherever you find it. And we'd also love it if you could connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, @readingwithyourkids on Instagram, @JedlyMagic on X, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/readingwithyourkids. And our website is readingwithyourkids.com. Want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Sarah Schroeder. Please be sure to check out Max, the Gemstone Finder. Also want to thank Daniel Harmon. Please be sure to check out season 4 of The Tuttle Twins. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And as always, thank you so very much for taking the time to make the world a better, kinder, more loving, and beautiful place. And I'm telling you, you do that every single time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading With Your Kids.
My life is magic. Ayo, ayo. My life is magic. Ayo, ayo. When I wake up in the morning, I take a look around. The sun is shining on my window. So many smiles, so many sounds. I've got breath in my lungs and my feet on the floor. Before I rush into my day, I
exactly like me.
Ayo, ayo.